Welcome to the Sound of Theos. I'm your host, David McDowell. Some of you might know, you might figure it out. When I record my podcast, I don't always do like an episode a day. Sometimes I do multiple episodes in one day. I just got done doing episode 5, which is, hopefully you guys are catching the Star Wars play, but it was The Theologian Strikes Back. This is episode 6, Return of the Theologian. And thought I'd just let a little band called Over the Rhine, Ohio play in the background while I talk part of the podcast today. Anyway, we're going to talk today about John Calvin. And if you ever get a chance to get a hold of anything written by John Calvin, he's fantastic. I don't say that because I am Reformed. I say that because he's just a great guy. I think even staunch Arminians would recognize Calvin as being a very influential person. We're going to talk a little bit about his doctrine, but talk about his life, because his life is very interesting too. He's recognized as one of the, if not the most influential theologian of his time. Some could even argue he's the most influential theologian of the past 500 years. And to boast that he is the most influential theologian of his time is saying a great deal, considering that he's considered a semi-contemporary of Martin Luther. So, John Calvin was born Jean Calvin on July 10th, 1509 in Noyon, which is I hope I'm pronouncing it right, it's a little town in France, and he was born a full 8 years before Luther posted his 95 theses on the door of the Wittenberg Chapel in 1517. For those of you that don't know, on October 31st, 1517, Martin Luther tacked the 95 Theses on the door of the Wittenberg Chapel, and that was really the moment that sparked the Protestant Reformation. Although it is generally recognized that Calvin's influence was initially felt in Geneva, Switzerland, it's important to remember that Calvin was indeed French. His father was employed by Bishop Charles the Hengist and the cathedral chapter in administrative role. He married in 1497 and was married for 12 years before his wife gave birth to John. Calvin's mother died when he was young. Calvin's older brother became a priest, but ironically enough, was excommunicated. His father's dream for his older son were extended to John, who obtained a benefice for John to study to become a priest. In order to pursue his studies further, Calvin moved to Paris in August of 1523, where the French Reformation was in full swing. Calvin soon settled at the College de la Marche, where he learned Latin grammar from Mathurin Cordier, who evidently was a great influence on Calvin. Cordier taught his students that loving Christ is the most important thing. Oh, I love orange juice. Anyway, apparently, due to his studies in Latin, Calvin changed his name to the Latin Ioannis Calvinus, which in French was translated as Jean Calvin. Shortly thereafter, Calvin entered the College Montague. In 1527, he received a second benefice, but his father disputed with the cathedral chapter and advised the younger Calvin to study law instead of theology. Apparently, Calvin's father was afraid that Calvin would lose the benefice. With this in mind, Calvin moved to Orleans, but returned to Paris in March 1531. While he was there, he had heard that his father was ill, so he left Paris for Noyon. His father passed away in May of that year. Calvin then returned to Paris to study language. The next year, Calvin published his first scholarly work, a commentary on De Clementia, written by a Roman philosopher named Seneca. The next year, a friend of Calvin's, Nicholas Cop, delivered an address regarding law and gospel that angered a few people. As a result, King Francis I decided to persecute Lutherans, and Calvin was sent running for his life. At this point, Calvin would have been considered a Lutheran. It was during this time that it is suspected that Calvin might have undergone a sort of conversion, although the evidence is not quite clear. Either way, he began to associate with other non-Catholics, i.e. Protestants, and other preachers, including Quentin Theophry and Anabaptist, which is part of the Radical Reformation, and traveling with Du Tillet via Clay. The French Reformation was happening, and Calvin was right in the throes of it, including penning the foreword to a French translation of the Bible. Calvin continued to write and finished the first edition of Institutes, or what's commonly called today Calvin's Institutes, in 1535. Throughout this time, Calvin continued to live in exile, at one point going to Italy. However, the time was coming when Calvin would have to leave France permanently. Calvin tried to go to Strasbourg, but war had broken out and he had to get around the troops in order to avoid the battles. He arrived in Geneva, intending only to spend the night. He was noticed by Dutilla and urged to stay on in Geneva longer than just tonight. Evidently, Calvin was hesitant because it took a supposed curse from Dutilla to make Calvin stay, insisting that if he left, God would have him arrested. Calvin began to lecture at St. Pierre at Geneva, starting on the Pauline epistles. However, trouble was brewing in Geneva. In January of 1537, the ministers of Geneva presented to the council in Geneva a group of articles in which they explained the steps necessary to complete the reformation of the Genevan church. These articles were accepted, requiring all the citizens to declare their allegiance to a confession of faith. A group of Anabaptists were stirring things up and slowing down the signing of that confession. Finally, the ministers that proposed the changes wanted to forbid communion to those that had not signed the confession, but the council forbade them to do so. In addition, the council wanted their own changes. When Calvin and some others refused the changes, they were forced to leave the city. Eventually, Calvin was persuaded to go to Strasbourg, where he began to teach a congregation of French refugees. While he was there, he completed a Latin edition of his Institutes. While in Strasbourg, Calvin married and then had a son, but Calvin's son was born premature and soon died. In addition, just 9 years after his marriage, Calvin's wife also passed away. While in Strasbourg, Calvin's heart seemed to be in Geneva, and although he was committed to Strasbourg, several letters passed between various factions of the situation in Geneva that seemed to indicate that the situation there was improving. It finally culminated on the council revoking its banishment of Calvin and officially asking him to return. Calvin returned to Geneva in 1541. Let me get another sip of OJ here. That's good stuff, man. Even though Calvin was back in Geneva, all the problems from earlier had not gone away. The issue of excommunication was one of many issues. Who exactly had this right? A member was excommunicated from the Lord's Supper or communion because of drunkenness. The Genevan council voted to allow him to take it, but Calvin denied the member and wanted a power play. The same happened, and this time the council warned Calvin that he could not withhold the Lord's Supper from someone without the council's knowledge. In the end, the council agreed to adhere to the church. Several other issues happened also, but unfortunately, there's not enough room in this discussion to cover them without dealing with the proverbial elephant in the room. And of course, that proverbial elephant is Calvinism. Calvin is probably most famous, or infamous, depending on how one looks at it, for Calvinism, although some might argue that modern-day Calvinism is a distortion of what Calvin actually taught. Modern-day Calvinism is best explained in the acronym TULIP, which stands for Total Depravity, Unconditional Election, Limited Atonement, Irresistible Grace, and Perseverance of the Saints. The crux of the Calvinist argument is predestination, an agreement with St. Augustine of Hippo, or St. Augustine, depending on what part of the world you're from, who also affirmed the doctrine of predestination back during the 4th century. It should also be noted that what is commonly called the 5 points of Calvinism fit together like a chain, although they are not meant as logical premises. To a point, they operate as such. Calvin believed that humankind was totally depraved, and this included the free will of man. Calvin maintained, quote, "Free will does not enable any man to perform good works unless he is assisted by grace. Indeed, the special grace which the elect alone received through regeneration," end quote. Calvin believed that humankind's free will was affected during the fall. Because of that, humankind cannot depend on a decision made by their free will to believe in Christ. But free will was granted to man in an act of regeneration that occurred prior to conversion. And that's all we're going to talk about today. In episode 7, we'll continue our discussion about John Calvin. Until then, love, peace, and a pot of neck bones. You've been listening to The Sound of Theos. See ya.